want to experience the room? My name is Wendy Parker, and I'm extending an invitation to you, dear friend, to open the door to my podcast. So come inside where it's warm, take off your coat, get comfortable, and together we will discover the spacious room. Hey there, and welcome to the spacious room this week. And this week I am continuing my wounded and on the run conversations with my friend Tamika Spalding. And we are going to be having a conversation about how to hold your peace. Now, the first thing you need to know about Tamika is that she loves to talk as much as she loves to listen. And she has previously worked for the relief agency ADRA, helping to run a motivational program called The Pinnacle of Terror. And this program was wheeled around schools and churches and detention centers, which included a rock wall, a wobbly ladder, and a leap of faith. It sounds amazing. And with a background in teaching, Tamika believes that there is great freedom and healing in sharing our stories. And she says that a voice is one of the most powerful instruments that we can use. And a trip around Australia, Europe and America back in 2019 highlighted the importance of stories to Tamika as she began striking up conversations with just about anyone on any topic. And this experience propelled her to start her own blog called His Heard. She serves on the committee at Amiga Writers and is a member of the Australasian Christian Writers Group, Christian Writers Down Under, and the 168 film. Tamika is a writer, a storyteller, and she is slowly writing her first young adult novel. She's married, and she's been married for over 15 years, and Tamika does life with her four children, a two-year-old whippet, and a pet chicken. So welcome to the spacious room, Tamika.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy.
Was that a great introduction or what? I want to hear.
That is a very long introduction. It looks like I've done a lot.
This Pinnacle of Terror just sounds awesome. You need to tell the listeners about this Pinnacle of Terror.
I'm actually from South Australia, and I watched a video at a youth rally, and it was advertising this thing called the Pinnacle of Terror for ADRA, as you mentioned. And so I applied for it when I was 18, and I got the job. So I moved interstate to Tasmania, and it was a trailer that's as long as a truck, and we hooked it up and we took it to schools and pretty well anywhere that would have us. And we ran groups with children and adults. It was amazing. We had some groups on the trailer itself, it had a leap of faith. So you had to climb this ladder and you went along the top and you stepped out onto this little step and you were all hooked up with a rope. And we were belaying down the bottom, and we would tell the person up the top from a countdown of three, jump, and they would jump out and reach this metal bar and swing around, and we'd get them to, you know, do the chicken dance and all sorts of things up there and then let go and come back down. So it was really entertaining. So that was the biggest one. We also had the rock wall, which was on the back of it, and we had a wobbly ladder. And we had a high wire. So it was like a trapeze wire that you would walk across and do dancing and jiggle around, and we get them to, you know, put a left leg up or a right leg up, and it was amazing. And what was amazing was that there were some kids that would race up and just have a ball, and there'd be, you know, other kids or adults that were very scared of height, and could reach, you know, maybe three steps up, and then we'd encourage them to go further, and their team would encourage them to go further. And some people would get to the top and they'd freeze, so we'd encourage them. And so it was really about encouragement and helping one another and supporting each other where they're at. And, you know, everyone had a great time. And so I absolutely loved the year. It was fantastic.
It all sounds absolutely awesome. I mean, that's really thinking outside the box to get over these hurdles, you know, the teamwork, the leap of faith and the, you know, it sounds great.
Yes. Yep. And actually, what was most surprising to me, we worked at a detention centre with young children, you know, ranging from 10 up to, you know, 16, 17. And what surprised me was some of these kids were in there because they'd, you know, gone into a place, done armed robbery, ran away from police, jumped fences and all sorts of things. But then when we came in with this pinnacle of terror and we'd actually ask a child climb up the ladder, it would be amazing that some of these kids actually were petrified of heights.
Wow.
And so we could still support them and encourage them, and they, you know, the guys that were with them could encourage them. And, you know, you'd think that they didn't have this, you know, vulnerability, but they did.
Mm.
And so, you know, we could never think that we knew all about them because it just wasn't true. So,
yeah.
You know, it was really good.
Yeah. No, sounds amazing. So Tamika, you are a writer. So why don't you tell the listeners, actually, because you love stories. I know you love stories. So tell us your story. How did you become a writer?
Well, it was back in about 2011. I wasn't feeling all that fantastic myself, and I came to God at a very vulnerable time in my life where I actually felt quite chaotic and I had no peace. And I asked God to help me. And what surprised me was, I suppose I met him for the first time in a different way, which was extremely close. And it hit me, not that because I believed in God already, but it went from I believe in God to, wow, he's real, I believe in God.
Mm.
And he shared with me a story that I felt so compelled to write I began this journey of writing. Now, I actually am still writing that story because I've run away from writing quite a few times, but God is very persistent and he keeps encouraging me and helping me with building that story. And so I'm still writing that story, but that's how it started, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think when you know a sense of calling with God and you just keep running and running and running, and he waits for you to stop running, you know. It's not like he's not behind you and he's not chasing after you, he's just going, waiting for you to stop running and to go, okay, God, if this is what you call me to do, then I'm going to do it, you know?
Yes.
So talking about running, my Wounded It on the Run book has the elk running away from the hunter when he gets wounded. So I never chose the elk for my book. I wanted to write a book about redemption, about church hurts, about how the whole wounding makes you run and you get to a point where you stop running and go, okay, God, I need to deal with this and I need your redemption to heal me and help me. So the elk actually chose me. And I love your website, Tamika, the His Herd website. You have used a stag. And I love that. And we didn't know that about each other. It was like, oh my gosh, I use an elk and you use a stag. This is amazing. Can you share with the listeners what made you choose the stag? Or did the stag actually choose you?
Well, the stag definitely chose me. When I started writing and I came up for the brainstorm, the idea of this website, I actually turned to, you know, my favourite animal or what would I like as my theme or my business name? And I remember asking God, and I woke up at about 3 a.m. with the verse Habakkuk 3:19 in my mind, which says, "The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like deer's feet, and he will make me walk on my high heels." And I remember reading that and going, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And at the time I had some other ideas going on. But I found myself coming back to that verse time and time again, as I actually began to understand what that verse was really saying, and I began to see myself as a deer that really wanted to have, you know, deer's feet. And so obviously if I'm the deer, then I saw Jesus slowly becoming the stag. And then as I looked into deer and stag, you know, you realize how majestic they are and how, you know, solemn and wise. And I just fell in love with the stag and with deer, and you know, it made sense to me, and it was, you know, a story within itself. And so I went with that, and I remember asking God, do you want me to use the stag? Do you want me to use deer in my website? And one afternoon I was actually walking down the street, and there's this boutique that sells quite expensive baby clothes and toys, which is, that, you know, beautiful to look at, but I don't generally buy anything in there, and I haven't actually gone into this particular shop very often. And I remember walking past, and I'd been thinking, oh, should I use deer? I'm not really sure. I said, God, tell me, should I use deer or not? I'm frustrated. I don't know whether I should. And this idea popped into my mind, go into the shop and buy some, you know, those washable nappies that you can get.
Yep.
My daughter was actually toilet training at the time, and we were putting on these, you know, disposable, like, training nappies. And I thought, you know, there might be a better way of doing this to train her overnight, instead of the nappies, to progress her from nappies to underwear. And I thought, oh, I doubt they'd even sell those, and if they did, they'd be really expensive. But anyway, I went into this shop, and on the bottom shelf, right at the back, there were 10 pairs of toilet training washable pants, and they were on clearance, and all 10 of them, which usually retail at about $34 each, were $20 for all 10.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, I'll take those. So anyway, I got down and I pulled them out, and at the back was this print of a baby deer, and just standing on this, and it only looked like it was a newborn that had sort of just take it, you know, just stood up for the first time. And yeah, it was on this grassy field, and I pulled it out and I took it to the counter, and I put these nappies on the counter of his pants, and I said to the lady, oh, this was in behind. And she said, oh, it's been months and months and months since that's been hanging on the wall. I didn't even know where it had gone. And she said, oh, I'm not really, we're not really going to be using this print again. You may as well take it if you're interested. And so I took this picture of this baby deer fawn out with me. And as I walked out of the shop thinking, wow, like I've made this great saving, and God knew that these pants were in there, it was just this thought that, you know, God was happy for me to move forward with this stag, and that I was like the baby deer that he was training. And it's just a really special moment, that one of many that confirmed that I, you know, was to use the stag. And so really, yes, the stag definitely chose me. And I, yeah, I love that about God. He makes things very personal.
Yes.
You know, and with a bit of sense of humour as well. And he's a storyteller too. So that's why I think, you know, we get along pretty well.
That's right. That's right. It was like, if you're looking for a sign, Tamika, this is it.
That's a sign. That's a sign.
So we writers like to learn the craft of writing, to write good stories. And people have all got stories. Whether you're a writer or not, you've got a story in you. Whether you verbalise it or write it down. But when people learn the craft of writing, this can be a daunting prospect, and people want to give up, or they don't want to jot their story down, and they think that their story is no good and believe that they can't write stories. So how do you keep those gremlins that creep into the confidence when it comes to telling your story or writing your story?
Well, first I'd say I still get gremlins.
Yeah, we all do.
And I think that that's a really good place to start as a writer, because as soon as you acknowledge you have gremlins, you become part of the group, because we all do. And so, you know, that's normal. And that's really, you know, I'm not using that as an excuse for myself anymore. But, well, I try not to, if I'm honest. But I think one way is I like to think that, you know, God loves to grow us. He actually thinks, you know, that He will grow us wherever we're at. And I don't think that the craft of writing is needed for you to begin your process, but I do think that craft of writing is important. And I think we need to know the difference between being overwhelmed by the idea of I can't start because I'm not a an expert in writing, as opposed to I feel driven with a story to share and I want to share it, and, you know, you should just go ahead and share that story, because as you write, you learn, and as you seek advice and, you know, you share your work with people who are editing, it's a process. You learn and you become a better writer, and that craft just naturally develops, and God takes you on that journey of growth. So, you know, just if you've got a story in you, start, and then over time you learn that craft. So yeah, never be worried that you can't start because you don't think you know enough.
No, I love that, and I hope our listeners listening right now, and, you know, maybe got a little inkling that they want to write down their story, or a story that they know about, and, you know, like you said, just start, and it doesn't have to be perfect. I think we get, you know, all caught up in it has to be perfect all the time, and it doesn't. Yeah. It's just to get it down. And even if no one reads it, you know, at least you've written it down like a testimony, you know what I mean? Oh, go on. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, in saying that too, you know, sometimes we get overwhelmed by the idea of who our audience is, and if I write this, it has to be perfect.
Yeah.
But what I've found personally is, the audience often is myself, and I actually need to write it because I'm learning and it's for myself. So I did realise that, you know, I often put myself in this competition mode, which I don't even realise I'm doing, where I compare myself to others. But, you know, as soon as you take yourself out of that, you know, the pressure's already gone. And it's not a race either. Writing is safe because you can write and rewrite it and rewrite it and rewrite it, and only share it when you're ready. So, that's awesome about writing too.
And I think a healing comes in that. You know, even if you don't want to publish books or do anything like that, a healing comes through writing it all out and processing it and looking it over and going through those motions to get some healing into. You know, it doesn't always have to be a tragic story, but, it, you know, we all go through life, we get wounds, and, there can be a healing in that. And on the back of that, you actually write songs too. And you shared a beautiful song with me a few weeks ago, and it was so beautifully written. And it was about that even though we're in battles and the path seems unclear at times, God is our source of strength. And that's when we sing. That's what your song was about. And you write with such depth, and I can feel the hard-won truths within your writing. So we're talking about holding your peace. So how do you hold your peace when you've personally felt discouraged or you've had a few church hurts? So can you share the process of writing songs and how you have got over discouragement?
Well, in terms of writing that song, that's the only song that I've written. But it's a quite a special song because I went to a workshop a few years ago, and we were given a Bible verse and 20 minutes to write a song. So I went outside and I sat under a tree, and actually it was at a time when there was a thunderstorm rolling in, and I actually watched it for the 20 minutes rolling in and then start to rain. And I actually put a lot of pressure on myself, you know, thinking about all the songs that famous people write and how to write it perfectly. And in at the end of the day, under that tree, I didn't write the song. I didn't have anything. So I came in back into the class where I thought everybody would be willing to share, and everybody else actually took a long time to come back. And I said to God, I've got no song. And he just said to me that I did have a song, and just to write what I had in my heart. And it was almost instantaneous, actually, where I had the verses of that song there with the tune and the words. They just were there, accessible. And I, when everyone else came back, I sang that song a cappella, and then the lady who was taking that workshop, she came over to the grand piano that was in the room and played an accompaniment to it straight away and asked me to sing it again, which was such a gifting on her part. And I just saw something come to life. And when I got home, I wanted to write more of the song, and there just wasn't anything to write. No words came. And so one morning, actually, I was in the shower, and where all my good thoughts often come.
Yeah.
And this song came to my mind, and I thought, oh, that's the rest of the song. That's the rest of the song. And so I got out of the shower, and I went in, and at the time the piano that we own was in the kids' room, and the kids' room was a mess. So I thought, I want to do this reverently. I want to do it perfectly. I want to do it just the way that God would want me to do it, which was, an expectation that I had on myself, that I'd put on myself of what I thought God would want. So I cleaned the kids' bedroom. I cleaned the piano. I got out my manuscript paper. I got out a sharpened pencil. I got out a pen. I set it all up, made sure the room was perfect, and then I went to write, and I had nothing. And I was quite disappointed about that. I thought, I had it. So I sat on the piano seat, and I put my head down to pray. And this was one of the first times that I had God actually, hard to explain, but it was as if he had walked in the room, was completely around me, and I felt very just light, and it was a really special moment, actually. And I asked God to help me write that song, and he actually asked me a question. He said, "Do you trust me?" And I said to God, "Yes, I do trust you." And he asked me to lean into him. And so at the time, I leant forward on the piano seat, and he asked me again, "Do you trust me?" And so I knew that I could fall into that into that presence. And he asked me that several times, and I remember thinking, if I go any further down into this, this angle, I'm going to fall off the piano seat. And it was probably the most significant time that I have trusted God, because in hindsight, I actually know that I leant so forward in that seat, and I actually had a pencil in my hand, and I thought to myself, God had asked me to lean into him and take his hand. And I remember thinking, if I take his hand, I have to let go of the pencil that's in my hand.
Yes.
And would it be okay if the pencil dropped out? And I went to take his hand, and the pencil stayed there. And I was on this angle thinking, I'm going to fall off, but I didn't. And I did really understand at that time what true surrender looked like, which was to rely 100% on something that you can't see but you know is there, that loves you, that cares. And, when I sat back up, I put away everything. There was no words there. And, a little bit like, God didn't just leave. He stayed with me. And so I thought, I've passed the moment. I haven't got the song. I sat on the couch, and there the words were. And I remember just grabbing the scrap piece of paper that my children had scribbled all over, a blunt pencil that was nearby, and I wrote the song out. And I realised, in that moment, God didn't want me to come with perfection. He didn't want me to try hard. He just wanted my heart. And, I think we often forget that God just accepts us as we are, and we don't need to put on a performance or make things perfect before we start. And so, that was really special to me. And, has continued, helped me continue writing, in that in this writing journey.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's such a good story to make. That's such a good testimony to just trust God. And it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to clean pianos and get your pen poised ready. And it's like, oh, I'm positioned now. I'm ready, God. And he's like, nope, you're not surrendered yet. You know, it's all about you. And it's where it's all about him. And that's something you're going to carry with you. You know what I mean? That has been such a tangible moment in his presence that you, when you feel like you're wavering to trust him, you're going to be pulled back to that moment and go, oh, that's right, God. That's right. I just have a scrap piece of paper and a blunt pencil. And you know what, Tamika? I think most of us feel like we are the scrap piece of paper and the blunt pencil. And God's like, but I can use you. I can use you. And I have created the stars out of nothing, and I can use this, you know, and it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
So you sent me a sermon that you preached at your church. That's right, isn't it? Yep. Yep. Got that right. Yep. And one of the profound things that you said, and I wrote it down and I thought, this is so good. You said, death on the inside will always show up on the outside. And I really found that really profound. And because I've seen death come out of people's mouths because of church wounding. So, you know, they're constantly going over it and talking about it, and there's no healing. So what's on the inside of us actually comes out. So is this why holding your peace is so important as a Christian?
Well, it is, because we are walking, talking examples of, you know, what's going on in the inside. And that was actually a quote by Jackie Rigg, and it was profound to me when I wrote that too, because, you know, we often find that there are people in our church, myself included, that really, really battle with this. And what happens is we begin to fight with ourselves, with our friends, with our family, because we're hurting. And, you know, we have this distorted view of ourselves. And I think, you know, an example of, God really has taught me how to hold my peace. Just to share another story, I struggle with peace. Peace is something that is, it's ironic I'm talking about it, because it's probably the something that I struggle the most with. And, you know, I know when I ask God to help me with peace, because I was going to church and I was withdrawing, and normally I'm quite talkative, and I was, you know, avoiding people that I'd normally talk with because I was hurting. And God showed me this beautiful image of myself standing on a hill with my hands behind me. And I understood that, you know, when we come to God in humility and we allow ourselves to see him, to see ourselves the way that he sees us, we are able to, you know, to get rid of that distorted view that we sometimes bring as a wounded person to church or to anywhere we go. Because when we see ourselves the way that God sees us, in that place of security and humility and surrender, we allow that picture to come in. And so we then are able to bear, you know, that great fruit, things like, you know, being able to be gentle with people, to be able to feel that we're valuable, to be able to be giving again, to be grateful, and to be able to be, you know, teachers within our church and be able to be teachable and content, and all those things that the Holy Spirit wants for us, you know, when he comes in and dwells within us. And when we get to that place, things like pride and arrogance, you know, they fall away from our fingertips because they have no hold in our heart. because God comes in and he changes that hard heart into flesh again. And, you know, that was a profound moment for me, because then we're able to be able to see a true version of ourselves, and, you know, that avoids this, this often wounded self that we have. It's one step, you know. There's lots of other steps that we can take to sort out our wounds, you know, talking to each other and all those things, but and getting professional help. There's lots of ways we can heal those wounds within our churches. Talking to our pastor, all those sorts of things are great. But it does start, at the level of being able to see ourselves in the right way, and we can do that by seeing ourselves the way that God would see us. And that sort of helps us get on track a little bit.
No, I love that. I love that. So you talk about church life and we use our gifts and our talents through church, through serving. And we can find that we can go through the motions of church, and, you know, sometimes you can feel unappreciated or undervalued or forgotten. And this is where the enemy can get into our thinking and distort the truth that we are valued, that we are not forgotten and we are loved, and God sees it all. So how do you hold your peace? Just help some listeners to understand how to hold your peace and serve God through our gifts and our talents he's given us with humility. And do you think that comes with forgiveness or forgiving other people, or just explain to me how, because you've explained so beautifully so far how you've learned to see yourself in God and you've learned to surrender, but is that a constant thing that you have to keep doing?
It's a constant thing, day by day, minute by minute, second by second at times, I think. You know, and I think before you can hold on to your peace, you have to know why you need it or why you want peace.
Yep.
Because sometimes we're so wounded and we're so used to living in chaos that it's actually hard for us to let go of that chaos and have peace. So I often ask myself, sometimes when I am feeling chaotic, why do I need peace? Because that helps us hold on to it. And then, to come back to God, to look at him all of the time, to constantly see yourself the way he sees you. Because as soon as you look to yourself, and it takes a second, oh, I can't do that because they're doing it and they're doing it better. As soon as you change the sentence and you go from, well, they're doing it better so I won't start, to something like, they're doing it and they're doing a really good job and God has given them a gift and God has given me a gift too and I can do a really good job, even if it's the same thing, because we're not actually in competition with each other. We don't have to be better or worse than somebody else. We have to be ourselves and the person that God has made us be. So we can hold on to that peace knowing I don't have to be like you or like you, because you're special and you're valuable and so am I. And and in terms of forgiveness, I've learnt very recently that sometimes we think, well, that's all nice and good, but I'm not forgivable, or I don't feel forgiven. And I've learned, very, very recently, today, actually, that, and I'm a very feelings person, and so I often think, oh, I don't feel forgiven. But forgiven or being forgiven, that's not actually a feeling. Forgiveness is a choice. It's a decision. It's something that you do on purpose. And then the feeling part of it is the freedom afterwards. So sometimes you have to make an intentional decision going, I have forgiven you. Doesn't mean I ignore you, or I think that what you did was okay, or that we don't need to take action, or, that I have to be around you every minute of the day. I see myself the way that God sees me, and I am a valuable person, and I can make an intentional decision to forgive somebody else or forgive myself, And that's the decision you've made. So then you step forward and you go, I've made that decision. And then the feeling comes, feeling freedom.
Mm.
And move forward. Make the conscious choice going, no, I've dealt with this. I'm now going to move forward. And that can be pretty tricky. So, again, go back to God, you know, constantly go back to God because, you know, he says to us, I am your God, you are my people. He's a relational God. And what I like to do sometimes is I like to ask other people, you know, who is God to you or what's your relationship with God look like? And it's amazing how many people say, oh, that's other people can talk to God, like he won't listen to me. Or often people will say to me, well, God talks to you, but he won't talk to me. And that's not a place we should ever be in because God's relational to everybody.
Mm.
He is God to everybody. And, you know, he may talk to us differently, but he will talk. And so, you know, if you just you keep giving yourself to God every day and say, I need that peace, he'll respond. And, you know, that's... I have discovered that holding my peace is probably one of the most important things that I need to do for myself to be able to stay on track with God and our relationship and to be in a positive place.
No, that's great. That's so good. And like you said, it's a life lesson that you continue to learn to, you know, the feelings don't come. You know, you got to forgive first and then the feelings start to come, you know. And a lot of people go, oh, you say forgive and forget, but no one ever says forget.
No.
You know, it's never forget.
No.
It's not a, you know, well, that was okay that you did that to me. It's you releasing them to God, you know, to go, God,
yeah.
you deal with it. I've had to heal from it, and even in my own life, I've had to wrestle with a lot of forgiveness. And you're right, Tamika. It helps you in your own relationship with God too. You know, because there's no walls and no barriers. You know, and like you said, it's a constant, sometimes minute by minute thing. You know, So.
I love in Exodus 14:14, the verse says, you know, the battle belongs to the Lord.
Yeah.
You're only to hold your peace. And when you read the context of what was happening in chapter 14 of Exodus, which is where we often find ourselves at a crossroad, what was happening was, you know, the Israelites were in Egypt and they were slaves to Egypt and they'd finally found freedom. And so they were on their way away from Egypt. They were no longer slaves. They were free.
Mm.
And they were, you know, heading to the promised land. And then they looked back and they saw the Egyptians and they got worried. And so they let go of that peace because worry came in. And, you know, if God wasn't around, that's probably an important thing to worry about because they were coming after you. But God was leading them really to what they thought was a dead end. I mean, they turned up to the Red Sea and thought, well, we're stuck. The Egyptians are coming and here's the Red Sea. And then God gets to show us his almighty power, which he loves to do because it's amazing, it's awesome, it's great for storytelling. And he gets to show his power and how much he cared for these people in a big, dramatic way. And he split that sea. And so the people, you know, they were at this crossroad. Oh, I'd prefer to be a slave even though I was abused and hurt and I was in a really terrible place. But I knew the expectation, I knew my role, I knew the rules, I knew. Or step forward into this, in faith, really, to cross the sea into a new place that was heading to the promised land. And I think we often come to a point where we make decisions. Do I look back or do I move forward? And everything that happened before wasn't null and void. It happened. But it doesn't mean we have to live there or stay there when we have freedom. We can move forward and go forward. So, you know, I think that that's a really important place to, you know, that story to keep in mind, going, the battle belongs to the Lord. He will split the Red Sea for you. He cares about you. just hold your peace, step forward in faith, trust in him, keep going. And I love that about God, that he does those sorts of things that are scary and often last minute, but he does those sorts of things.
Oh, it does. It does, absolutely. I love it. I love it. And that's one of my favourite stories, Exodus story. It's such an epic story. And, you know, while you're reading it in the Bible, you just want to go to the Israelites. It wasn't good in Egypt. Stop looking back and keep moving forward. And then God's like, hello, this is what you do.
That's right.
So I believe that one of the keys to holding your peace is, and like you've said to me, Kat, I'm preaching to the choir here, that to trust God. So why don't you tell the listeners how you've learned to really trust God in all the seasons?
Well, the confession that I make is that when I wanted to know if God was trustworthy, I asked lots of people. I went around and I asked people, and then I researched to the hilt. I read lots and lots of books, because when I asked the question, do I trust, it was a bit further down the road in my relationship, and it went from being, you know, we learn as some of us, not all of us, but some of us as children, I was raised to believe in God and Jesus, and I did. And there does come a point in, I think, everybody's life where they go from a head knowledge of God and Jesus to actually really trusting God. And, you know, I thought, oh, if I do enough reading and I ask enough people. But at the end of the day, how did I learn to trust God? By listening to the quiet voice that persistently came back when I spoke to God and asked him questions and listened for that voice for an answer. And really, I really seeked God. I really did. Sometimes on my floor, laid flat on my face. Other times would just be, you know, in bed or everywhere. And while I was watering the flowers, while I was mopping, you know, I'd talk to God. And what I found was he answers that question. And I trusted God because God was teaching me how to trust, and we had an active relationship. And, you know, sometimes, you know, he would ask me things to move forward with that I couldn't see would make sense. And I did. And that built faith over a long period of time. It didn't happen overnight. It's happened over a long period of time, like all good relationships. And, you know, he's earned that trust from me because he's been persistent. He's been consistent in who he is. And he does answer the questions that you ask in ways that you don't always expect. But ultimately, he was the one that helped me trust in him. And, you know, I followed blindly until, you know, till you have hindsight to talk about. And once you have enough hindsight of where God has been, then you have trust because you have evidence behind you. Mm. And it doesn't become about other people's opinions anymore, because you know in your heart and in your mind your own relationship with God. So, yeah, that's how I got there. And it was a lonely road for a long time, but in learning that lesson. But, yeah, I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah, I think a lot of people say that. It was, you know, a tough road, lonely, but I wouldn't have changed it for a second. It's good. So as we wrap up this conversation, just one last question to help the listeners. As this pandemic continues around the world, and currently I am actually in lockdown, so we're waiting for the ride the wave, everybody. We just ride the wave. So what advice would you give the listeners on how they can hold their peace in this difficult time that we're currently living through? So how can you help a listener right now who is struggling to really hold their peace, whether they're in lockdown, whether they've know people who've you know, contracted COVID, or they just watch the news and fear gets a hold of and a grip of them, what would you say? How can they hold their peace?
Well, I would say first that they have permission to actually, you know, feel worried, and it is hard. You know, God empathises with us. God sympathises with us. He knows our struggles. He knows exactly where we are. And, you know, you can talk to God about that because it's real. It is happening. And if you're worried, you can talk to God. So I think that's really important. I know often, you know, as Christians, we get really enthusiastic and we say everything's fine. Mm. And sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
And so I think first you have permission to talk to God and other people to say, I'm worried, I'm scared, I'm, you know, be truthful about how you feel. And I think the next thing that we can ask is, you know, what can we do for God? When we were in lockdown last year, and we've been really lucky in Tassie, we haven't had too many lockdowns, but I had a young boy up the road who I'd never met, and I'm quite friendly to our neighbours. I like to just talk to everybody, but this is one person I hadn't met. And he came down and he put biscuits in my letterbox. And so when I went to the letterbox to check, I had these biscuits.
Oh,
and I
amazing.
Thought, that is such a nice, kind thing. And he wrote in, you know, five-year-old handwriting and put his address on. And I think that was really cool because I thought, oh, I've got an opportunity to make biscuits and take them back. And you know, you can ask yourself questions like, well, what can I do for God, and what is in my community, or what is in the scope of what I can do? Because I realised, well, I didn't know the neighbours up the road. What am I missing because I don't know these people? So, you know, what can you do? And then sometimes we can think about what's important. You know, as all my friends know, I actually grow a bit of a beard, and I think some females do that. It's very embarrassing and we hate it. And during lockdown, you know, you can't go and have your normal IPL treatment if you're having that, or, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day in lockdown, no one cares because no one can see you growing a beard. And you have this perspective of, well, actually, does it really matter? And so, you know, you can think, well, relationships actually do matter. Mm. Everything aside, relationships really matter. And our relationship with God matters. And I think the last thing that I really love to focus on is, COVID aside, we were still struggling as humans before COVID came. And, you know, there are lots of other situations that are happening now that are not COVID related. And so, you know, COVID has a huge impact on us. You know, I've had friends in America pass away from COVID. I've had others in lockdown and financial. There's lots of stories that you know, are true that are associated with COVID. But we struggle with or without COVID. And so what I like to focus on is that we actually have a hope. We have a hope because Jesus came and he has already given all of his people, every single person on this earth that's ever been born, immunity to a much bigger problem than COVID, and that's sin itself. And what I like to think is, in the context of the stag and you know, us being like deer, you know, we actually belong to him, his herd, and we belong on his, you know, side, and he barracks for us. And no matter our personal situation, we have a hope that Jesus has already died a death, so we're covered. We're all covered with his immunity, and we can look forward to having a face-to-face relationship, that next step from the relationship that we can have right now in heaven with him. And I think that that's a great hope to keep in mind when everything becomes very overwhelming to us.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. No, that's great, Tamika. And this has been gold nuggets all the way, as normal in these Wounded and On the Run conversations. I am loving these conversations. And Tamika, I want to say thank you so much for joining me on The Spacious Room. This has been fun. It's been inspiring. It's been uplifting. And I really appreciate you joining me on The Spacious Room. So thank you, Tamika.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you. And if you've loved this conversation, then please let me know. And I'll see you next time in The Spacious Room. Thank you for joining me today in The Spacious Room. I invite you to join me in my other rooms, my website, www.thebigvoiceonline.com, and my Big Voice YouTube channel. See you in the room next time.